Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our 2021 Foreign Policy Leadership Development Program. I'll be moderating here tonight. For those that I have not met, my name is John Goodnight. I'm our Southern Regional Director with the John Quincy Adams Society. I've been with the Society for about 3 years now, a little over 3 years, and originally from Albuquerque, New Mexico, but lived in the DC area for the past 5 years. Tonight's focus will be on our student leadership panel, talking to current and former leaderships of JQAS chapters and having a discussion about the things that they've done on campus, the success they've had, the obstacles they've faced. So I'll go ahead and introduce our panel here tonight. First, introducing Julia Gledhill. Julia is currently a program assistant with the Friends Committee on National Legislation. And she is the program assistant for militarism and human rights at the Friends Committee of National Legislation. She advocates for U.S. foreign policy centered on diplomacy and human security through her work with coalition partners, members of Congress, and FCNL's grassroots network. Julia previously interned in the Center for Diplomatic Engagement at the Meridian International Center and served as the fiscal policy intern in the office of Senator Michael Bennett. Julia graduated from Colorado College with a Bachelor in Arts in Economics and Business and a minor in Political Science. And Colorado College is where Julia was also part of our JQAS chapter. Our next panelist will be Samantha. Samantha is currently completing a double major in International Studies and Russian Studies at the University of Florida this year. She is the president of the University of Florida JQAS chapter, which she founded in the winter of 2020. After concluding her internship in Washington, D.C. with the Department of State. Samantha has an academic focus in foreign policy analysis and Russia-U.S. relations, but spends her free time playing guitar and laughing at her cat, Inanna is the name? Great. Our next panelist is Alyssa Nurkitz. Alyssa is our current chapter president at the College of William & Mary. She's an incoming junior studying international relations and data science. Alyssa is currently a research assistant and a data analyst for the student-run disinformation center on campus. And then our final panelist here tonight, my friend and colleague, Ryan Knuckles. Ryan Knuckles is currently a program associate with the John Quincy Adams Society. He's a graduate of the University of Alabama, where he was actively involved with the John Quincy Adams Society chapter there throughout his college career, including his service as a chapter president in 2018 and 2019. So really excited to have you all here tonight. And I'll actually go ahead and get started with my first question towards Samantha. So Samantha, you're kind of at the beginning of this journey where we have a lot of different kind of tiers of people here. For our audience, you'll notice that Samantha is our newest chapter president, part of this panel, but has done a phenomenal job at the University of Florida, especially facing kind of the COVID pandemic and getting her chapter started during this time. So Samantha, tell us kind of about getting your chapter started. What obstacles did you face and what things have kind of made you most successful in getting launched?
Yeah, that's a great question. Getting the chapter started was a really fun process. To me, John Quincy Adams was, the society was sort of a bridge between what the University of Florida had and what the university was offering. There is a significant and notable gap, especially our international studies program is really small. We don't have a security program whatsoever, but we have a lot of really ambitious students who often will go to UF and then they'll get to DC. And then within that little niche, they'll start to pull up as many students as they can into DC and try to bridge the gap from Florida to DC. But it's challenging. And if you end up going through campus in a way that doesn't get you into that circle where you have those connections and you're trying to just kind of get to DC from the swamp, it's really, I think it's an overwhelming process. So the first and foremost interest that I had in reaching out to John Goodnight and in working with JQAS was really just figuring out how we could help international studies students and foreign policy interested students on campus achieve their fullest potential. And that's what JQAS really is about to me. Everything from the emails that I had been getting for a while before to meetings such as this and events such as this. I just think that especially during the coronavirus time period and through the obstacles of trying to build relationships through our computers, I think having a preset foundation like JQAS really did afford a level of fun and simplicity and also clarity and foundation that I'm not sure that University of Florida, nor even just us as students who are already trying to pick up all these things and walk these avenues, would have been able to do without. So that was sort of the background and interest, and we've loved it. Our chapter's really fun.
Absolutely. It sounds like kind of providing that supplemental learning on campus really helped attract a lot of students. And that's super exciting. And we'll definitely have a chance to dive more into that. I'll go ahead and move on to my next question, which I'll direct towards Alyssa. So Alyssa, being part of a chapter that has had a lot of success in the past, for those in our audience that don't know, William & Mary has been a very successful JQAS chapter with a lot of great events, probably the crowning achievement being a near 500 person event with John Mearsheimer and right before COVID had actually started. So, you know, how have you been able to kind of build on the success of that chapter since you kind of came in a year after the chapter had started and, you know, you joined that e-board and now you're up to being a chapter president here going into your junior year. So how do you build on the success of something that's already been so successful?
Definitely a lot of adapting and kind of seeing what everyone wants and what everyone's into. So at the beginning of, I guess, the fall semester, we kind of did a whole feeler to see what people would want to do. And there was a lot of mixed reactions and stuff. People don't want to be on Zoom as much as they wanted to in the beginning, or don't want to look at the screen as much. So we narrowed it down to one speaker event per semester, which was less than what we had done before. Our aim was two. So my first year we did two per semester, and Mearsheimer was awesome. But we've also started a podcast through JQAS. So we have interviewed people who have already talked and spoken just a little bit more about maybe a book that they've written or some articles that they've had published and stuff. So, and then we've also interviewed our professors and our Global Research Institute heads to talk to them about more outreach and just a different perspective for international relations. So that's kind of how we've been building a podcast, and then intermittent meetings, and then one speaker event per semester is kind of what we've been adapted to during COVID, but definitely just kind of reaching out and seeing what other people want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know it's something that you all have done to be very successful on campus is to be involved with the kind of the institutions already on campus. Can you talk a little bit more about that, how you kind of identified these institutions and kind of how you leverage those relationships?
Yeah. So another international relations organization, well, first of all, our campus is really grateful because we have a lot of international relations majors, and so there's a lot of interest already. But we do have a competing organization, Alexander Hamilton Society. So we actually coordinated with them my first semester. So we were able to have a debate, and that also brought in a lot of people. So we worked together to kind of create that speaker event and drew even more people than one of us would have had by ourselves. And then we also have the Global Research Institute, which is they kind of have a different projects for like aid data and International Justice Lab and other research and things like that. So we get to help ask them for help if we want other speakers, and you guys can bring in speakers. And so we can have maybe a little bit more to talk about different perspectives and stuff. So we just have that great outreach as well. So they can help also with future career, just like JQAS too.
Absolutely. Awesome. Thank you so much for that. And I'll direct my next question to Julia. I definitely want to talk a little bit about launching your career here in a bit, but I know that you've been working on a lot of exciting stuff with the Friends Committee. Just kind of fill us in on what you've been doing since graduating from JQIS and talk to us about some recent successes that you've had.
Sure. So today was a very exciting day, probably the most exciting day that I've had in my job so far. And that is because the House passed a bill to repeal the 2002 Authorization for Use of Military Force Against Iraq, also known as the 2002 Iraq AUMF. This is the law that authorized war against Saddam Hussein's regime in 2002, and it has remained law since then. It has been very broadly interpreted by the executive branch to justify new military actions unapproved by Congress. So House repeal of the 2002 Iraq AUMF today was a really big win for me and my coworkers who have been working on this issue really for over a decade. And it is the first step to Congress reasserting congressional war powers, taking back those Article I war powers. And we're very excited about it. So that's kind of the news from today. But I work on a number of issues in the militarism program at the Friends Committee on National Legislation. We work on issues related to ending indefinite detention, closing Guantanamo Bay. We work on issues related to civilian casualties resulting from US military operations, drones policy, torture policy, and all sorts of things like that that have to do with US wars abroad. So it has been just such a privilege to work at the Friends Committee and sort of come into this first job out of college with all of the resources that I was given throughout my time at JQA. So I'll leave it there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd love to actually dig in a little bit more on that last part. Can you talk a little bit more about kind of those resources that have helped you be in a spot to launch in your career and being part of these achievements so early in your career?
Sure. So I guess I'll start with what's probably applicable to everyone, which is just the plethora of resources available on the website at JQA. When I was introduced to the society my sophomore year of college, I had all of these interests and I just didn't really know where to put them. I didn't know where to go with them. And my interest in foreign policy really started with interest in language. I studied Spanish and Chinese for most of my life and had a really keen interest in travel and just had this interest in international affairs, but didn't sort of know where to go with it. You mentioned I studied econ, which, gives you a certain goggles, if you will, in terms of the realms of opportunity after school. But it's interesting to hear Samantha and Alyssa talk about their sort of IR departments at their schools, because I went to a really small liberal arts school that did not have an IR program. And being involved in the John Quincy Adams Society really gave me context for the paths that you can take within international affairs and within public policy specifically. I just had no idea, the paths you can take toward government, advocacy organizations, think tanks, research, all of that sort of thing, which was particularly helpful to me as a person who was kind of just tuned into the econ department, where most folks were pursuing finance jobs, frankly. Just the resources, being a part of the community, but also coming to the leadership conferences for two summers in college were huge for me. I fell in love with DC. I live here now. And besides that, I'll just shout out John Gay, because he gave me so much personal support as well. He personally marked up, edited my entire thesis in college, guys. So I really can't speak highly enough about JQA and just about John Goodnight and John Gay, because they have been personally friends of mine for years now and just really gave me a lot of direction. So I'll leave it at that.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for that shout out, of course. But this is a great highlight for anyone in our audience that we truly have a philosophy here at JQAS that your success is our success. The more, our leaders and our alumni are achieving, the more excited it gets us. So I'll come to you now, Ryan. You have an interesting perspective getting to be a student leader that was part of one of our very first JQAS chapters to now working in our national office. Considering that you kind of have these two different perspectives, what are some resources that you wish you would have leveraged more when you were a chapter leader?
Probably. Thanks, John, for that question. I think probably just getting connected with, national organizations in DC that work in foreign policy. When I was a student, I kind of bounced around with various kind of issues in political science that I was interested in. That was my major. I was taking kind of classes on law, taking economics classes and stuff like that. Didn't really kind of find my real kind of like deep interest in foreign policy until the end of my junior year and kind of going into my senior year. But I was involved with the JQAS chapter since my freshman year, the fall of my freshman year. So I would probably say that is probably the big thing that I wish I leveraged more, was just connecting with the national organization more and just kind of taking advantage of the context that they can offer. Because, in my current role now, I can say that, we're growing our contacts every day. The people that we know, the organizations that we partner with in DC, like the Friends Committee and so many others. So that's probably the thing that I wish I kind of leveraged more, was the national context, the national organization, because I did not intern for in DC, like any of my summers, you know, you think that that's like a common thing that people do if they're working in foreign policy, is they intern at the State Department or the, you know, Brookings Institution or something like that. But that never happened to me. It just never worked out. And I kind of wish I would have leveraged that a little bit more to kind of make those contacts in the restraint community.
Absolutely. A great answer. And so now that we're warmed up, I'll actually dabble a little bit here in the Q&A and go back and forth between some of my questions and these great Q&A questions. I'll start with Justin's question. This will be for all panelists, but Alyssa, we'll go ahead and start with you on this round. So Justin Mitchell asked all panelists, as college students, we see tons of clubs and organizations across campus, including political foreign policy clubs. What are three things that JQIS offers that most other clubs on your campus do not? Kind of what unique hooks led you to the organization? So Alyssa, we'll go ahead and start with you there.
I think the prominent speakers and just kind of having them bring them in. And then there's a ton of advertisements that JQIS leverages throughout the school. So they were in the student newsletter, we're in the GRI newsletters, and kind of just a lot of outreach. So then in all of your IR classes, people are talking about, oh, are you going to this event? Like, blah, 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 this person's coming. And then you want to learn more about that person. And it's very, very nerdy, but it does happen. So that's kind of what the hook originally grabs people in for. But then also the former president, Austin, I'm going to give him a shout out here. He did a really good job when I was talking to him about leveraging kind of all the access points. So for the newsletters that JQS always sends out, he's like, look at all these internships. This is what you could do with JQS. Like, these are all, this is more outreach stuff. So that was obviously definitely made me even more career oriented than I already was, but was a great resource to have. So that definitely drew me in.
Absolutely. And just real quick on the note on Austin, he's another great example of someone who's been really great involved with JQAS and is currently doing an internship with one of our partners in political risk consulting who works out of Milan, Italy, and he's having a great time with it. So just another example of opportunities for people that have come through JQAS. Ryan, I'll go ahead and bounce that question to you next, though, kind of the hooks that led you to the organization.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. I think based on what Alyssa said, leveraging, you know, the kind of contacts with the national organization with speakers, you know, the IR club at the University of Alabama where I went to school was maybe still is like not really that connected with DC. You know, they would have speaker events with professors from UA and I'm like, that's fine. But, you know, I take classes from these people. So, I hear them already, you know, 3 days a week, 2 days a week. So, having, you know, JQAS send a speaker down was just really kind of a big draw for me of like, oh, this person works in DC, they're working on relevant work. I agree with them on a lot of foreign policy issues. And kind of beyond that too, I'd say that the help that John Gay gave me really kind of tried to refine my interest in, you know, kind of the field of political science down to international relations. Because as I mentioned before, I was just kind of bouncing around with no clear direction. The career calls that I had with him really just kind of helped solidify my interest in foreign policy. And also just connecting to with you, John Goodnight, you know, he was my Southern Regional Director when I was a chapter leader at Bama. And I can only hope that I'm living up to, you know, what he did with my current role as Northern Regional Director. So those are what I would say is the kind of unique draws or the speakers that we can bring out to you, and also just connecting with the JQAS team. And they've been a great help. And I know that we're helping a lot of people now. So those are the kind of three things I would say.
Absolutely. And then Samantha, you can go ahead and take a jab at this next.
Yeah, I really love what's been said so far. To me, there's really just one thing that makes JQA so impactful, like especially on our campus. Which is, I think that JQA does the, for lack of a better word, kind of does the legwork for us as students. On a big campus, we all have a lot going on. We're going to places, just walking from point A to B can take 35 minutes. And so our time, I think, is really important to us. And to be able to get home from class, sit down at the end of the day and have a list of like, this is what you missed in the news and this is what you should apply for. I apply for everything on every email that goes out, and I don't spend the time that I used to researching. Like, I used to be hardcore going through random websites, talking to people, spending an outrageous amount of time on LinkedIn. that I still do a little bit, but neither here nor there. What I really appreciate about JQA between the actual that research being done for me and also with the modules available on the website for content, chapter content, and for continuous learning. I feel sort of like it allows us as students to spend our time doing what's really important, which is actually like applying and having those conversations, not figuring out how to have the conversation, but having the conversation, you know what I mean? And that's a small difference, but in IR, where it can be so vast between like think tanks and government and public private sector and all these different things, you can really like lose yourself to research. My Excel spreadsheets are out of control. And so just to be able to take that burden off, I think for all of us, especially here at UF, that's very compelling and also helps us, like I said before, really just helps us to achieve our fullest potential, I think, in terms of getting to where we want to go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Julia, you got the bases loaded here. So go ahead and back clean up for us on this question.
Sure. Well, I think I failed to mention this previously, but John Gay recommended that I apply to the job that I have now. So I agree more with what Samantha said. He, you know, sent me an email, said, this looks great for you, connected me with someone on staff before I even applied. It's like really the connection building that was so important to me in my job search. And I know it's so difficult when we're doing this virtually, which I was in that situation as well. I graduated just a year ago, so I know it's really difficult to be looking for those types of opportunities. But I think Samantha covered it.
Absolutely. Awesome. And I'll get back to Q&A here in just a second, but I do have a question I wanted to ask for Alyssa. Alyssa, considering that you're kind of like a third generation chapter president at William & Mary, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that leadership transition process from the perspective of someone kind of coming up through the ranks of your chapter. What things made that leadership transition process easy for you, and how were you able to kind of prepare to take over the chapter?
Yeah, so I guess I joined my second semester freshman year, and then they had a secretary position opening. So I applied, and then once I was involved, I was kind of the secretary. So I introduced the speaker and then showed them around campus before they were speaking, and show them where is good to eat if they want to eat after or stay for a little while or whatever. So that was kind of my job. And I forget, I'm blanking on the last name, but Eric, his beard.
Gomez.
But he wrote, Eric Gomez. He was awesome. He was with his wife and he parked all the way across campus, and he had like, he just wrote books. So he had a huge box of all the books that he had. So I was carrying all of them across campus for him. And it was, Virginia, Williamsburg, it's hot, sweaty, we're in the swamp. And I just felt so gross, but I was meeting this really cool guy. So, but that's kind of my introduction as the secretary. And then Austin's kind of helping me with the transition of like, here's now what you need to do kind of thing. So I'm going to shout him out again for that. But so that's kind of the stepping stone, I guess, into the president position. So I got to learn about all the backhanded stuff, like whatever anyone else needed help with regarding advertisements or the social media posts. I helped with that too. So.
Awesome. And I kind of want to bounce into this question a little bit more by going to Samantha here. You heard Alyssa talk a little bit about kind of the importance of kind of the things that were delegated to her early on in her positions. It seemed like to me too, that when you were kind of getting your chapter kicked off at the University of Florida, you made it a high priority to get those around you involved in delegating tasks. What specifically comes to mind is when we co-hosted the event with you. I forget the exact event, but you had multiple people from your chapter that helped us moderate that event. And it seemed that it's really important for you to kind of delegate and get people involved with your chapter and give them true responsibilities. How do you believe that that mindset has kind of helped the growth of your chapter early on?
Thank you for acknowledging that. I have a really wonderful group of students that they're here now that I work with. And to me, I think one thing that helps good leadership overall is knowing what we as people are good and not good at. And I'm not really afraid of those parts of myself that I'm not so good at. And I'm really fortunate to be able to work with people who are really good at things that I'm not very good at. And I think we kind of all complement and balance each other well. I think that IR is all about relationships, and especially as we prepare to go to DC or abroad, the more we can practice working in a team and the more we can practice compromising, negotiating, dream sharing, and goal setting, I think the more actually prepared we are to walk into interviews, but actually just to walk onto teams and feel comfortable picking up on small projects, taking initiative. And I think often that it's the people who don't, who haven't had big responsibilities yet and are just really kind of bubbling and ready to show that they're there. I think those kinds of people are the ones who are going to continue kind of carrying forward the UF chapter. So I'm very excited.
Absolutely. And I know, Ryan, you wanted to jump in on this real quick.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I could speak as a second generation chapter leader. I wasn't there for the founding of the JQS chapter at Alabama, but I was, a big presence in the E board my sophomore year when I was the secretary there. And Emily and Allie, the chapter leaders there, they're both doing great things now that they've graduated. They kind of helped prepare me for, you know, the role as president. They were giving me small little responsibilities to do, whether it was, you know, here, make, you know, this presentation for this meeting, or, prepare for the speaker event by, you know, giving us a bio of the speaker so we can read out, or just doing all those type of things of, hey, you know, here, you know, go and table for this meeting. You know, one of things that I struggled with was, you know, just getting out in front of people and talking about, you know, the society. At first, I was really kind of shy. I didn't really understand, like, you know, what I had to do, how to kind of talk to people. And I can say that, you know, they really helped me with that. And so did John Goodnight, especially through our summer leadership conference. So, I can say that those are kind of just the things I wanted to touch on. It's like, as a second generation leader, you know, like the good kind of leaders will kind of help prepare you and build for the long term. I know that maybe it was in the Q&A, but I just wanted to address that real quick.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Julie, I think you would have some great thoughts to kind of tie up this subject of kind of leadership. If I recall correctly, at Colorado College, you all had kind of a model that shared the leadership pretty well. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you and Rowan were co-leaders, kind of co-chapter presidents. Talk to us a little bit about kind of that dynamic and maybe the pros and cons of kind of splitting up that chapter president role.
Yeah, Rowan and I did share the presidency, you might say. We didn't call ourselves co-presidents, co-leaders. And it worked out great for us. But frankly, that was largely because we're very close friends. Mm-hmm. And because we had the same type of mindset that I think Samantha spoke a little bit about, which is just that, like, we had different strengths and we wanted to do different things also. So he handled, you know, a lot of coordinating with the political science department. He was a major and I wasn't. So he had a lot more connections to professors and was able to sort of schedule spaces on campus for our events and things like that. And I was the one that, like, wanted to do the poster on Canva and would post on all the Facebook pages and things like that. So we always consulted and we lived together for the year that we were actually co-leaders. So it was very easy for us to coordinate. So maybe that's not the best reference point, but I do think that it's done well if you know your strengths and you very clearly delegate. So our senior year, when we were co-leading our chapter, we brought on Nick, who now leads it, and kind of just included him in all of our conversations and asked him what he wanted to do and what he didn't want to do. In between the three of us, we covered everything. And we really encouraged him to just put together a list of responsibilities for the two lower classmen that we also brought on our senior year. We created those new positions. So by the end of senior year, the three of them were really running the chapter. And I think that just having your positions clearly outlined at the beginning is really the recipe for success, because otherwise, you know, you don't want to be talking about who wants to do what every time you need to convene a meeting or schedule an event.
Absolutely. And it sounds like a theme that I hear reoccurring in all of your answers is finding, you know, fitting the task at hand with what you're able to do, what you're able to accomplish, what you're good at, and what you're going to enjoy doing. And we'll dive deeper into these thoughts kind of next Thursday. Ryan and I both will be hosting sessions on kind of building chapters and building that leadership out and stuff like that. So some of these questions we might save for next Thursday, and it's given me good thoughts of what I want to make sure to include. I do want to hit our Q&A here real quick with a question from George. Samantha, I think you'd be great to answer this question since you most recently started a chapter here. What are like the top five things or so that a person starting a new chapter should be careful of and make sure to properly perform / set up when building a new chapter in your school?
It's a great question. The first thing that I would say is foundationally making sure that your university is prepared for that. If your club needs to be a part of the student government or a part of maybe like your international study center, whatever it is, like working with the faculty to get an advisor is a really great, a great way to start and make sure you have a consistent space. The next thing that I would say is pushing out resources and information as hard as you can, like reaching out to all the faculty that could be interested in JQA and asking them to send out a blurb or something that you write, the kind of things that you'll be doing, the kind of meetings you'll be having. The third thing that I would do is push out applications and see if you can get a cohort of people who are interested in being a part of the team. I think honestly, the more the merrier in terms of some sort of leadership role, because it guarantees a level of engagement. And I noticed some of the questions in the Q&A had to do with engagement. Having multiple people on your team, but more than that, having multiple voices presenting at different meetings helps maintain a wider audience than one person can on their own. So having people assume that responsibility, but also meet that interest with their varied interests can really help to kind of build bridges. The fourth thing that I would say is to make sure that you're organized. Having a short and long-term goal plan for what your small and large impacts are going to be for the semester, for the month, for the year, whatever it is. And that's something that working with your faculty can help, because you could have faculty come speak. You could ask faculty what they're already doing to build their IR program and how JQA can be a part of that. And then the last thing that I would say is to try to make it fun. I think sometimes in this work, it can get really serious and heavy, and intentionally integrating social activities, even if it's just like watching an old IR movie or some kind of Soviet film or whatever it is. I think even like a watch party for some kind of speech, those bonding moments are integral to long-term attendance, to long-term joy and enjoyment overall of the society. That was five things.
Absolutely.
To ramble, but
yeah. No, I think those are great answers. Thank you so much for that. I'll kind of go to my bag of questions here and kind of combine my question with some themes that I'm seeing here in the Q&A. And I'll direct this one towards Alyssa. We haven't heard from you for a second here. We've already kind of referred to some of the events that William and Mary has been able to host, a ton of fun events. You referenced the debate and the Mearsheimer event, and all events that you all have had seem to be very well attended events. Talk to us a little bit about the recruiting process for a large event and how you're able to kind of get people from interested to a butt in a seat.
Yeah, so obviously it was easier because it was in person, but I think mm-hmm. advertising a while in advance is incredibly important. William and Mary does a student newsletter. So the social media head, which is Katie at the moment, she sends out something earlier. And then we also reach out to professors that we are close with or are in a class for right now and say, hey, like, would it be possible if pre-COVID, can we come in and present that we have this event coming up post-COVID? Hey, would you be willing to share on a Zoom session our information for this upcoming event type thing, which gets people who might not even have heard about it or not on our list serve access to even know about the event that is happening, to get more people engaged in something that they might not be interested in IR overall. We do have a ROTC program on campus. So if a topic is about military, or something, then we can put outreach for them for that. I don't know. So we just try to get to gauge topics of interest and kind of vary things based on what people want to hear. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things that you kind of mentioned in here, and I'd love to transition this kind of question over to Ryan. I think Julia, you might be able to hop in here as well. The faculty relationships can be so important. Ryan, I know that you had a strong relationship with Professor Gibler at the University of Alabama. Can you kind of talk about the importance of that relationship, the ways that you can leverage those faculty relationships, and kind of how to build those relationships? I know that's three big things in a short amount of time, but would love to hear your thoughts.
No, for sure. Yeah, I met Professor Gibler. He was the faculty advisor for the chapter. He came to one of the first meetings and I met him, just kind of said hi. And then, you know, a couple of years go by, it's my junior year. I know that I saw that he was running a study abroad program in Belgium and I thought, hey, might as well apply to that. And I applied for it, got in, and you know, I kind of leveraged that that relationship with him and got into that program. And then also what I think is more important, is that I eventually became a research assistant for him with a project that he was working on. Before I was working at the leasing office of the apartment complex that I lived at the university in Tuscaloosa, obviously wanted to do something more relevant to political science. And I just kind of shot him an email and was like, hey, are you doing any projects that I can help out with? And he was like, hey, yes, you know, for sure. Here's this project that I'm doing. It's on this, and this. If you can do these things, that'd be grateful. And he paid me a little bit also, which was, of course, very helpful. So that's how I say I leveraged my relationship with him, as, you know, he was involved with the JQAS chapter there. And then throughout me knowing him, whether it was working for him on the project or whether I was studying abroad under him in Belgium, you know, I would just say that he was a great contact. And he also was eventually the one who kind of persuaded me away from doing law school. That was my kind of original path. I was about to take the LSAT, and he emailed me and is like, you know, why are you taking the LSAT? You know, you should, you know, look into a job in international relations, you know, do foreign policy stuff instead, because you're part of the chapter, you're doing this work for me, you seem really interested in it. And I was kind of like, oh yeah, like I am very interested in it. And, you know, that eventually kind of one thing led to another, and here I am with JQA. But I can say, you know, leveraging contacts with, you know, your faculty advisor, if your university requires one, or just more generally, just IR faculty, political science faculty at university is very crucial. And also just the context that we can provide. We know a lot of professors throughout the country who can help in various kind of ways. So does that answer your question, John?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was curious if, Julia, I know that you at Colorado College had a very supportive faculty advisor as well. Curious if you have any thoughts on this subject.
I do. I actually kind of want to boost my former co-leader, Rowan, who I led the JQA chapter with our senior year. I will say that I think he leveraged his relationship not only with our faculty advisor, but with all of the poli-sci faculty very well, by really encouraging everyone in our chapter to develop personal relationships with those faculty, whether it be David Hendrickson, who is our faculty advisor, or many of the other very cool, very knowledgeable people on staff. I can only speak to the experience at my college, but our department was very pale and very male, and it was personally very difficult to establish that rapport. And frankly, Rowan brought me in. He brought me into the poli-sci department. He brought me into JQA. And he did this because he was my friend and because we shared a lot of interests, but he also did it for everyone that he encountered that was even remotely interested in the John Quincy Adams Society and in political science or international affairs generally. So I can't say that I necessarily did this because I wasn't actually that close to David, but the relationship that I had with David was because of Rowan. And I think that he played a really important role in growing our chapter our senior year, because he invited freshmen and sophomores over to dinner, you know, at professors' houses. And that's a very small school thing, I realize, so it doesn't apply to everyone. But as a chapter leader, you can use your own relationships to just make those people available to anyone that's interested and that might not be in your same position or as comfortable as you are approaching a professor after class. So I think that he did that really, really well. And it opened up JQA a lot just to diversify like the students interested in the chapter, but also to bring in underclassmen, because underclassmen haven't had that type of time with professors yet, and they don't know how to really approach it sometimes. And if you're there, then they can then establish that relationship and continue it after you graduate.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that faculty relationship can be so so important and so fulfilling, honestly, because it gives you an opportunity to give a professor a platform to talk about what they're doing with it. You know, a chance to invest in students, which many professors like to do. And as Ryan was saying, like sometimes get involved on people's projects, which gives you experience and lines on your resumes. And it's a great route to recruit people as well. I won't go too ramble on too much about this, but highly encourage you all to like make those attempts to build those relationships with faculty partners. I'll take my next question here from the Q&A and point it towards Samantha. What advice would you give a new chapter president who is struggling to attract new members and retain current members?
My advice would be to delegate. Because as I was saying before, I do think that the IR field is so big, and I don't think that every chapter meeting has to have like a certain number of people to be successful. In fact, I actually think in my experience, this is just my opinion, so hot take, I actually think it's more successful if you see a lot of different faces throughout the month or throughout the semester. And to me, that indicates that you as a chapter are talking about different things that meet different interests. Someone mentioned like working with ROTC. Another thing is working with like big companies and international jobs, or working, you know what I mean? Working with the government or talking about your internships. And that's just going to meet a lot of different audiences. And so instead, I wouldn't think so much if you can about retaining people on like a general body meeting to general body meeting basis, but instead maybe to have some kind of event to kickstart the year. And maybe again, some kind of fun celebration or watch party at the start of the second semester, to have a moment where there is like, who are you? How are you? What's going on? And then maybe people will be more inclined to come to GBMs, which don't pertain to their specific interests. But that would be my advice. And then I think that you can more easily meet those varied IR interests by having more types of speakers, more types of students. Something that my chapter and I did was send out a Google survey that was literally questions like, what do you want to hear about? What don't you want to hear about? What have you heard too much about? What do you think's missing at University of Florida? What do you think's missing about JQAS? And just kind of like flipping through and flipping around those answers, I think helped us to hone in on where our interests, our passion, and our knowledge could intersect with the responses of our student body.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for that. Ryan, I see you have your hand raised, so feel free to jump in.
Yeah, I speak to what Samantha said. I completely agree with basically everything she said. I mean, I had the same issue when I was chapter president. Turns out that, you know, the things that I was interested in weren't necessarily the things that the general body of our chapter was interested in. I was coming up with all these meetings that were so very specific on like a certain foreign policy issue, you know, not something that a lot of people were interested in. And I didn't really realize that until I started asking the e-board and asking the general body, that the chapter members, for advice and what they want, you know, to talk about and to go to meetings for. So I'd recommend just, you know, sending a feeler out to them, whether Samantha said a Google form or just asking during the meetings. You know, sometimes if you come up with something, but people want to talk about something else, that's totally fine. And also just a couple other things I would say is, you know, you want to make meetings kind of topical on, you know, sometimes on certain issues. So, you know, if, you know, you, let's just say, for example, I had a JQA meeting tomorrow, maybe you'd want to talk about, you know, the Biden-Putin summit in Vienna, or, you know, repealing the 2002 AUMF and things like that. That's kind of one thing that I always kind of resorted to sometimes when I was kind of struggling for ideas on meetings, was, you know, topical issues that are happening in the news. You know, there's always something going on in the field of international relations regarding the U.S. as part of the few perks of our position, I would say, is that there's always something going on. There's always something that we're involved in around the world. There's always something to talk about. So yeah, I just wanted to add a couple of things to Samantha. She made a lot of great points, and I just wanted to kind of add my kind of experience to that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thanks so much for that, Ryan. And once again, like some of these questions, this like we'll be able to dive deeper into next Thursday with Ryan and I sessions on kind of campus leadership and giving some specific things that could, I think, really help increase your successes with retention and numbers. So our next question, I'll go ahead and bump this one to you, Alyssa. This one's from Shane Farmer. Shane asks, do you have any advice for engaging students who may not be as interested in or directly studying international relations / political science or similar degree programs?
Yeah, so I know Samantha mentioned this earlier, but kind of like the social aspect to kind of get people more engaged. We could watch a documentary together an IR movie or something. So that's a good way to keep people engaged. Otherwise, definitely, we also did a feeler survey about what people want to hear and what people don't want to hear. And so, but I know JQA also has a ton of those modules that you could definitely find something people like, oh, yeah. Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah. Absolutely, Ryan.
Fighting in the war room.
You're good. You're good.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in just real quick. Hi, Shane, a chapter president of one of our Northern Region chapters. So, you know, as I kind of said in my previous kind of thing, I think just keeping topics broad. For people that aren't interested, because, you know, if you start off a meeting and you're already talking about some super specific foreign policy issue that, you know, is kind of like in a master's level or something like that, you know, an IR, you know, person who's a freshman or a sophomore, they're not necessarily going to know about that. And that's one of the strengths of why I got involved with the JQA chapter at Alabama, as Allie and Emily are the previous chapter leaders there, did a great job of keeping topics broad and relevant. You know, Donald Trump was just elected kind of in that time period, November 2016. There's a lot of talk about what that meant for U.S. foreign policy, and kind of the same is happening now with Joe Biden as he kind of starts his administration. So I just think keeping topics broad, you know, just topical and make it something that, you know, anyone can think that they could talk about is probably a good way to go. And also when you're recruiting specifically, and I'll talk a little bit about this in my session next Thursday, so we want to explain everything, but, you know, you want to ask open-ended questions to people, you know, making sure that, you know, they're giving themselves kind of time to talk about themselves and their interests, so that you can tailor, you know, your content towards what they're interested in. You know, you don't want to just ask super narrow kind of questions that they would give like a one or two word answer to. You want to let them talk. So that's just kind of a sneak preview, I guess, of my session on Thursday. But I just wanted to add to that. And great question, Shane.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for that, Ryan. I'll direct our next question towards Julia. I think you'd be great to answer this. It comes from Reno, who asks, can you speak on the misconception that young adults are rarely compatible with the foreign policy circle in DC, especially those fresh out of achieving their undergraduate degrees?
Absolutely. I also had this misconception. And I guess I can only speak to my experience working for an advocacy organization for almost a year now, which is that I really have not had that experience. If anything, my biggest sort of lesson learned of the past 9-ish months is that I didn't speak enough or up like early enough in my job. And as an intern, I was always pretty hesitant for, you know, the same reason, because you're doing a lot of grunt work and because people don't ask you what your opinion is. But I just really haven't felt that. And maybe it's because I work for a Quaker organization, or maybe it's because I work in the advocacy community. But I have been so encouraged to speak my mind. And that was like very intimidating to me at the beginning. But even when I was an intern on the Hill, like 20-something year olds run Capitol Hill. That's what I'll say. I could probably say a lot more, but I, just like on a tactical level as well, I found that you know, in my job, I do a lot of work with coalition partners. So at the Friends Committee, we work with a lot of other organizations that I'm sure y'all are aware of through JQA, Win Without War, or Civic, or, you know, there's ACLU, like there's so many. And that's a really big part of my job. We write letters to Congress together. We meet biweekly and talk about, you know, current events, things like that. Like what's going on with reports from the president to Congress about the legal and policy frameworks guiding the use of lethal force outside of war zones. Like we do a lot of work together, and it requires a lot of organization, and the young people are the ones that do that. And, you know, the advocacy directors, the legislative directors, even in congressional offices that we work with, they really appreciate the young people who are like, huh, maybe we could do this better and streamline this whole process by doing X, Y, Z. Because like, you know, nobody else has time to think about it. So basically I haven't had that experience, but I fully had that expectation. And I have been very pleasantly surprised.
Absolutely. That's awesome. Samantha, go ahead and jump in here.
Yeah, I just want to jump in and add, I totally agree with what Julie was saying. And this is a different experience because it was an internship. But for people who are still like early in their college career, I interned as a sophomore. And I had a really similar experience with Julia where I was quiet and just trying to get people their coffees while it was still hot. And by the end of it, it was like the process of learning how to take initiative, especially for me as like a young woman in DC. And I'm from Oregon and then moved to Florida and then was in DC. Like I didn't know a soul. So I really think that as much as we hear that misconception, and as much as you can, just kind of taking it and leaving it at the door when you walk in, it actually is really helpful because we already talked about networking, which was like an amazing seminar that we had. But part of like showing your value, if you will, is also showing who you are. And that's like sharing your opinion, jumping in on projects, taking initiative. So I just want to emphasize what Julia said and add that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks so much for that.
Can I add one more thing, John?
Of course.
I'm sorry. I know we're at the last few minutes here, but I just wanted to add, like, in general, but specifically from an advocacy perspective, young people, we have lived our entire lives, the majority of our lives, at war. And we have a very personal stake. We have a very personal stake in ending U.S. militarism and imperialism abroad. And that's very compelling. It's compelling for Congress, and it's compelling from an advocacy perspective because young people are the ones who organize, and they're the ones who, you know, can come to their members of Congress as constituents and just make demands until things happen. And that's, you know, the kind of advocacy and organizing work that young people and, you know, not just young people have done for the past 10 years to repeal the 2002 AMF in the House today. But we have a very personal stake in our future. So I think that we, if anything, we're the most qualified to talk about nuclear policy, to talk about U.S. militarism generally, you know, specifically nuclear policy tends to be really old and difficult to like get your foot in the door in. But yeah, I would just remember that you have a very personal stake in every right and I guess background and just, yeah, it's your life and it's your world. So we're all qualified to talk about these sorts of things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's two quick things that I wanted to address as a moderator in Q&A. First is this one that's been upvoted. How long does it take to start a chapter on campus? Just real quick, Forever asked that. That does depend. It's a campus to campus. If you're curious about starting a chapter, you can email myself or Ryan. My email is john.goodnight@jqas.org. Ryan's is ryan.knuckles@jqas.org. Each university might have different recognition processes and time. So just want to make, I saw there was a few upvotes on that, but I will give the lawyer answer there for once and say it depends. Also, Bryce, I want to just get to, let you know that your question is perfect for what Ryan and I will be discussing next week. So thanks so much for asking that. For those that didn't see in the Q&A, it's asking a lot about kind of retention issues, getting people signed up, not getting them kind of in the door. And that's what next Thursday will really be about. So we'll go ahead and try to do the big finish here for those of you who watch Pardon the Interruption. Panelists will try to keep your answers real slim in these last few. But I'll go ahead and start out with you, Ryan. It's kind of seen where you started with JQAS when we were really young as an organization to where we are now. What things kind of excite you the most, and what should people be looking forward to in the future?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. When I was getting involved with JQA in 2016, you know, there was just a little bit of stuff going on. And the way I see it now, we have all this stuff going on with JQA and the restraint community in general. I mean, in 2016, 2017, organizations like the Quincy Institute weren't a thing at all. They haven't been created yet. Now there's, you know, organizations like that and so many others, organizations like the Friends Committee doing great work. And, you know, also just about the work that we're doing at JQA, you know, we have our Marcellus Policy Fellowship coming up. We have our Morgenthau Grand Strategy Seminar coming up. So we're coming up with all these new ideas. And I think as, you know, kind of lockdowns end and COVID, you know, as schools open up, I think we'll be happy sending speakers out to your campus and things like that. So just very happy about the work that JQA has been doing and the kind of growth in the realism and restraint community.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. Alyssa, I'll go to you next. What would you tell people to get the most out of their JQA experience? What tips would you give them?
Go to what you can. Don't be afraid to share your opinion and talk to people, because you are in a room full of people who care the most out of anyone. So you just don't be afraid to say something. It could be wrong, could be right, whatever. Just put your opinion out there, especially when Ryan was saying earlier about those broader questions. It's always good to just get whatever other perspectives and stuff. So
absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah. And leveraging the relationships with National, I would add on to that. We definitely want to help everyone in this room here. Samantha, I'll do my next question for you. What would you say to those people who are thinking about starting a chapter, but are nervous about the obstacles of doing so?
I would say, don't hesitate to reach out to this network you're looking at right now, or to the network of people around you who share your interests and passions. You are pursuing a career that's going to be hard and challenging, and starting a JQAS chapter is a really awesome way to get the ball rolling on that, and to set yourself up for success long term in terms of experience and relationships and knowledge. And honestly, it seems a lot harder than it is. If I could start it virtually in 2020 during COVID, you can start it and it will be fun.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for that. And Julia, something Ryan was kind of saying is that I want you to talk a little bit more on is kind of this ripe ground for realism and restraint within Washington, D.C. And you see this very much kind of transpartisan effort. I'm curious in kind of the work that you've done in a C3 way, talk to kind of the coalitions and this transpartisan support that you see on the ground level of people right of center, left of center, progressive, libertarian.
Yeah, that is my favorite thing about my job. I said before that we work a lot with coalitions. We also work a lot with, like, you know, in coalition, we work with a lot of advocacy groups, but we also work with a lot of military, family, and veterans groups on the right and on the left, in the center, libertarians. I mean, we work with everyone. And that's kind of one of my favorite things about working on foreign policy specifically. A lot of my coworkers who work on domestic policy issues, I don't know how they do it, because they can be so partisan. And there is a lot of common ground on bringing troops home and really giving veterans the support that they need when they do return from forever war. I would say that within the coalition, really finding the common ground and then just hitting the pavement together has been my favorite thing about my job. Again, it's something that you have to address at the very beginning. Just know where your common ground ends and stay within that limit.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And I think that's a great way to close this out. Thank you to all of our panelists and people who attended tonight. We'll be back next Tuesday with our U.S. military strategy and China with three leading thinkers in the field. So thank you all so much for coming out. I look forward to seeing you next Tuesday. And once again, thank you to all of our panelists. You all did a great job, and it's always a pleasure working with you all. And I can't wait to see what you all continue to do in the future. We'll be right back.